This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk all about the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry. And today I have back with me JC Maldonado to talk about business valuations and all things business related as it comes to it from, you know, acquiring business as assets and you know, all of the stuff that business owners can do with their business and sell their business. And so today I wanted to jump into specifically business valuations as like from a business owner perspective, kind of things we could do to work on it, or what are people, if we wanted to sell our business, what things should we be working on? Hey JC, welcome back to the show. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So as a business owner who may be interested in selling their business, what could we be doing to work on our valuation and making our business look more, you know, purchasable, I guess?
Well, when you think about business valuation, I think one of the first things that a business owner has to kind of make the determination is, what exactly are you selling, right? What is it that you're selling? When you sell a business, what value is the buyer receiving? So one of the most important things to consider is to understand that your business has separate value from you as an individual. So there's you as the business owner, the executive running the company, and then there's the business itself. And what you have to contemplate as a business owner is that when you sell the business, to the extent that you're connected to the day-to-day operation, all that really means that when you sell the business, you have to come along with the deal. Because if you are the one running your business day-to-day, and the business is kind of interconnected with your executive capability, it's kind of connected to your management skill, then the question becomes, well, then what is the buyer buying? If they have to replace you, that's never going to be an easy thing. Once you leave, the business's value now is, you know, somewhat tarnished. So I think business valuation has to be looked upon in two different ways, right? One is, one thing that drives value is the actual net earnings of the business, right? Which means, you know, there's an income stream that the business produces. That's essentially what the buyer is buying. And the second part of it is kind of like the management of this income stream. Like, and to the extent that that management is transferable and the income is transferable, that's what kind of drives business valuation. And if the business owner is kind of caught up in the day-to-day management, when the business gets sold, the owner should expect that he should come with the deal, meaning there's going to probably be a long transition period before the seller could actually exit.
Gotcha. So there's two things. The first thing you said was the net income, which brings up some of my questions or business owners may have. You know, a lot of when you're running a small business, a lot of what you do is planning so you don't have to pay taxes. And that means I don't want a big bottom line. Because if I show a big net profit, then that's something I have to pay taxes on. So there are things that I do with inside the company to spend money on company assets or things like that that are improving the business, but don't improve the bottom line. How does that affect it? How can you overcome that?
Well, when you sell a business, it's typically going to be, it's going to sell for a multiple of some sort of earnings. In subspecialty construction, a typical multiple would be between 3 and 4 times adjusted net earnings. So this would be, and net earnings is just a fancy term of saying profit. But to determine real profit, you would take, you know, your revenues minus your expenses, you know, let's say on a tax return or a financial statement. And then you're going to add back depreciation. You're going to add back amortization. You're going to add back interest if you have debt on the business that's going to be retired at the closing. And then you'd add back all the officer compensation. Okay. And then you have to deduct the cost of management. In other words, what would it take to replace you as the CEO of the business? And that net number is pretty much is going to be your net earnings. And typically the business will sell for a multiple of those net earnings. So for instance, my net earnings is $700,000. It might sell for $2.1 million, which is a three multiple. If it's $500,000, it might sell for 1.5. If it's $1 million, $1.5 million, it may sell for a higher multiple. It might sell for, three and a half, four times that number, right? But the key for earnings is that it has to be transparent. So in other words, if the buyer can't see the earnings, and it's kind of, and there's too many, and the books are not clean, and it's not clear to the buyer where the money is being produced, well, that's going to affect the amount of money that a buyer pays for the business. So earnings has to be transparent and has to be transferable. So to the extent that earnings is not transparent, then the buyer is only going to pay for the earnings that he sees, as opposed to, earnings he can't see.
Well, I mean, I know at least, especially in the construction industry and a lot of other industries, has been for the last several years, you get a 100% depreciation on, big assets that you buy or over a certain class, which are then, deducted from your gross revenues. But if you're adding that back in, that's a level of, that would go straight to the bottom line is what you're telling me on the net income.
Correct. So one thing to consider is the transparency of earnings will determine what a buyer pays. Usually the purchase price is determined by net earnings. Again, a fancy. They call it adjusted EBITDA, net earnings, but it's all a fancy way of saying profit.
Gotcha. So it's never considered on the gross revenue.
No, not in construction. There are industries that where the revenues might drive value, but construction is not one of them. So that's going to determine the price. Another thing determines the price is that there's a concept that, when I go and speak in front of groups, there's a concept called not all earnings is treated equal. Mm-hmm. So not all earnings is equal. So to give you an example, there's pretty much three types of revenue sources, right? And to the extent the business owner understands this, this could really help them understand what drives the value of the business. So there's project revenue, which is a lot of subspecialty construction is kind of built around project revenue, right? Typically, they're either working with end users or general contractors, and those general contractors kind of, they engage in projects, and then they subcontract the subspecialty construction businesses, to supply labor and materials on a job or handle a specific trade on the job. So in those scenarios, that's considered project revenue because it's usually one time. Now, those customers can potentially come back, and in that case, it's repeat work. But usually, one-time revenue that's associated with one-time work is called project revenue. Gotcha. Then there's repeat business. Repeat business is when you have a customer, and they, on a periodic or predictable way, come back to the business. So they'll buy from you, and then they'll come back 2 weeks later and buy from you. Then they'll come back to you a month later, and they'll buy from you. And they're just repeat customers, right? So think of a restaurant, right, where they have all these consumers, and then some, the consumers that are happy with that restaurant come back, right? And to the extent that the restaurant is tracking these customers, then they can determine who's a repeat customer as opposed to a one-time customer. So a lot of project revenue is based on one-time customers, or they're dealing with customers that are not necessarily predictable. Whereas repeat project work is coming from customers that are coming back. So that's the second form of income, income that derives from repeat customers. And then the third type of income is what we call recurring revenue. So that's typically, there's either a contract, either verbal or written down, that where a customer agrees to come back to the business and pay for the products or services on a contracted, agreed upon basis. And to the extent that a customer does that, that kind of creates predictable revenue. And we call it recurring revenue because it's ongoing, it can be predicted, it's transparent, and a business can kind of project its growth patterns or could determine what level of debt service this income could cover. And it's normally looked upon favorably from buyers who are trying to buy companies where the risk is reasonable and the risk can be calculated. So those three types of revenue, it's either, you know, project revenue, repeat business, or recurring revenue, right? Those three different revenue streams are looked upon differently from buyers. So buyers will typically pay more for a business that produces a lot of recurring revenue, right? Whereas they'll pay less for that businesses that produce a lot of project revenue, right? So this is an important distinction in subspecialty construction because most of the revenue is project-based. Now, you can make the case that if you have some GCs, you have good relationships with GCs, and they're coming back to the well, and you get to bid on a lot of their work, that may be a source of repeat business. But all the work is bidded, and it's not done on a voluntary basis, so to speak. So it's still kind of project revenue. So if subspecialty construction is typically built around project revenue, therefore, it usually trades for the least amount, a lesser of a multiple than if it was a business that was kind of built around recurring revenue. Now, there are also...
If you had a service-based company that did service contracts, that'd be more valuable to somebody that was looking to buy.
Particularly if the retention rate was high. Gotcha. So if you have a service company. So, and there are a lot of subspecialty construction companies that kind of have the potential to develop a recurring revenue model. So I'll give you an example. An elevator installer could also come up with maintenance contracts, a service, and then make ongoing revenue. A commercial landscaping construction company could come up with a maintenance program where they do the pruning, the edging, the mowing, and have contracts in addition to project work that they might do for end users or GCs. An HVAC company can come up with a service department and then kind of sell service contracts to those. You also have pool industry, right? The pool construction company could have a service repair. So a lot of the construction businesses actually have opportunities to create some sort of complementary service. A painting company could have a cleaning service that they could, that's recurring in nature and it's, and kind of provide that service. So understand, no matter what business you're in, you could probably create some level of a recurring revenue model. Look, even outside the world of construction, an accounting firm, which is namely project-based, they make money, through audits, and they make money through tax returns preparation, and then they make money to maybe being brought in for due diligence on an M&A transaction, a business acquisition, or maybe they're involved with the real estate transactions where they're being brought in. Whatever it is, they make money with, audits, stuff. But if they want to create a recurring revenue model, well, they may develop a bookkeeping service where now you have all these clients outsourcing bookkeeping to them, and they can provide the labor and the expertise on the bookkeeping side. And then bookkeeping would actually represent a better business because it's a recurring revenue model, even though it doesn't require the same expertise as typical accounting functions. So most businesses, if you really think hard and think it through, have potential recurring revenue models that could be implemented into it. And what's important is that this creates a better cash flow, but it also makes the company more valuable. So not all earnings are equal. So earnings must be transparent, and then understand that depending on the kind of earnings that you have, that will drive the purchase price of the business. And usually the purchase price is determined by a multiple of earnings. So there's a concept in my talks where I point out not all earnings are equal.
I think that's a great point. Let me ask you another question as a business owner. Or I've heard that some business owners may not use all business money for business expenses. And they may have might use them for personal expenses, which obviously would affect the bottom line. Is that accounted for at all?
That may not hurt as much if it's accounted for and can be proven out. So gotcha. For instance, if I take a $50,000 vacation, a 2-week vacation to some island somewhere, and the cost of it was 50 grand, and it's in my books and, that it may be in the tax return financial statements, it gets kind of written off as travel, right? Because we're taking advantage of the tax laws. In a due diligence scenario, if you can show me a receipt or you proof that it was a personal vacation, then it may not have too much consequence. Now, to the extent that your financials or your books and records are littered with this kind of stuff, I would recommend to an owner who's looking to sell his business kind of clean up the books and try to keep those kinds of things separate.
And so, like, if you get in a position where you've been running it for a while and you want to sell it, so the first thing you would work on if you didn't already have it was getting the book straight.
Getting the book straight is extremely important, along with understanding, at least understanding realistically, what kind of earnings your business produces.
Gotcha.
And that'll help establish the right expectations. And if you're not ready to sell, then maybe you could establish the right plan going forward to increase the value of your business. So one aspect that increases the value of business is just transparency of earnings and the type of earnings. Now, the second part that's important, that's equally important, is what we call the transferability of those earnings. Okay. And what we're asking and contemplating this is, to what extent can these earnings be transferred to a third-party buyer in a fluid manner? So now there are other aspects that could affect the transferability of these earnings. So one of them is having the business tied in, having the business owner tied into the management of the business. That's actually a detriment. Even if the business owner is competent, even though if they've been making millions of dollars, that's actually bad when it comes to go and sell your business. So the best part is to have a business that's operated by a management team separate from the owner. So that if I'm a buyer, I buy the business, I'm getting the management team with the business, which means I'm getting the income stream, the income producing capability of the business, but I'm also getting built within the business an ability to transfer that over to me as a buyer. If the owner is intertwined into the business, then that could be problematic. Now I have to make a deal that involves the owner staying on board long term. And certainly, even if I do that, I'm not going to be motivated to pay a premium for that because in essence, I'm taking a risk. So transferability, and there are other transferability factors that you have to consider as well. For instance, concentration in any one area is never a good thing. So if you have too much of your revenue with one customer, too much revenue established by one salesperson, too much revenue as a result of one or two supplier relationships, all right, you have concentration. And of course, the owner being involved in the management is a management concentration. So there's management concentration, there's customer concentration, there's salesperson concentration, there's supplier concentration. All concentration issues basically preclude the owner who's looking to sell their business from transferring over the business to the other side in a fluid manner. All those could have impact. So for instance, if you have customer concentration issues, let's just say you have 40% of your revenue with one customer. Now I go buy the business and then a year later that one customer leaves. Well, that is a risk that's pretty significant, and that's going to make me as a buyer pay less for the business or not want to buy the business at all. So these concentration issues really do affect the total value of the business. Or more importantly, they may affect the terms of the deal. So which means, okay, you're making $1 million a year, I'll pay $3.5 million for it. But because you have one customer that makes up 40% of the revenue, I might make a part of the purchase price contingent on the retention of that customer over a long period of time. Yeah. Or I might make a part of the purchase price based on what we call an earnout, which is a part of the purchase price is contingent on certain things happening in the future, particularly performance, revenue, profit, etc. So to the extent that, you know, if I do that as a buyer, but what the seller is ultimately doing is taking and sharing in the risks. So the more goodwill transferability issues there are, the more risk the seller has to take when you go and sell the business in order to make the business itself viable and sellable. Because if I don't do that, then chances are the business will never sell. Remember, I don't know if you know the statistic, only 20 businesses in the market, 20% of the whole businesses in the business for sale market actually sell.
Really?
So that's an 80% failure rate,
really?
Meaning it never sells. So 80% of all businesses in the for sale market never sell. And that statistic has been around for a long time.
Really? So that means...
Despite all the information that's out there about exit plans and business valuation and all the new internet age where there's a ton of information that's out there on this type of stuff, the statistics have not changed. Only 20% actually, I'll say 20% of all business owners who look to sell their business actually complete a transaction.
So another question that I have is, when you acquire a business, if they have like back office operations, like invoicing all and all that stuff that you already have established, do you keep their back office or do you use your own back office?
Well, it really depends on who the buyer is. If I'm a buyer, let's say I'm in the space and I have a team, then I might make an acquisition. And if there's an unnecessary expense that we can cut, we'll do it. Obviously, that just makes good business sense. For the most part, as a buyer, I'm trying to keep the glue together, the foundation together, and kind of go through a one-year learning period before I make any major decisions with the business. And that one-year learning period is really important going forward, especially if you want to develop a plan to grow the business. One of the biggest mistakes that acquirers make is that they make changes too fast, too quickly, once they buy a business.
Gotcha. So. And so a couple questions then. Do you help people get their business in a place that it's ready to sell? And then on the other side, too, if somebody's going to buy a business, do you help them run it after they first acquire it?
Well, I'm not a service provider. I'm a buyer.
Okay.
So when I buy businesses, I'm buying the business for it to have to be an asset in our portfolio. We have 22 companies under management. So I'm not I may meet an owner, and if he doesn't want to sell, or, you know, we're talking about valuation and there's a disconnect, then I might educate him or her with regard to some of the things that constitute value. And hopefully and hopefully the seller could take it seriously enough that maybe that could spark the foundation of making a deal with him. But at worst, at least he has information that I've shared with him. Yeah. But remember, it's earnings and it's transferability of those earnings. Those are that's the two things that drive value.
So, based on your personal experience, tell me like your favorite business you bought or favorite sale transaction. I'm kind of curious as a buyer what you're looking for.
Well, we've bought some good businesses over the year. Most of the businesses that I buy make between $1 million to $3 million in net earnings, right? That fancy way of saying profit, right?
Gotcha.
Revenues can range between $3 and $30 million, but I'm focused on the $1 to $3 million kind of space in terms of net earnings. I'm typically buying the purchase prices of my deals are between $3 and $10 million. So that's the size deals that I do. And these are high performance small companies, and we're looking to transform these businesses into bona fide middle market operations. But in doing so, most of the owners are running the business day to day of the ones that I bought. So my transactions usually include the owners making a long-term commitment. They make a short-term commitment to run the company day to day for at least 1 year. And then they make a longer term commitment to kind of be on the board of directors and retain a stake in the business as we grow. So it's important to me to keep the founder around. Now I can put a lot of cash in their pocket, and I can certainly get them to the board level where they can enjoy and be a part of the strategic development of the business. So usually those are the types of deals I go after.
Gotcha. And I'm just curious, how is that, from having dealt with these business owners, how does this transform their lives? I mean, it sounds like a dream, like to go from managing the day-to-day to go to just on the board being strategic. What have you seen?
Well, there's a couple of things that would stop an owner from doing the type of transaction I'm proposing. One, an owner who is looking just for the most money usually doesn't work with me. I would say I'm a mid-range bidder. I'm a fair bidder. I'll pay a fair price for a very good business. But I'm not going to pay a premium, nor will I lowball and come in with a wacky structure or try to get the seller to take more risk than they deserve to take. So I'm a very fair buyer looking to create a deal that's good for everyone involved, including myself, and a deal that's palatable to the seller on some level. So my type of deal, I want the owner to run the company for 1 year, and then after that 1 year, get out of the day-to-day and be a part of the board, be a part of the strategic development of the business, right? And a lot of the owners, particularly most owners I'm buying from are between 50 and 70, And I would say more of them are between 50 and 60 than 60 to 70. And that seems to be an age where they're young enough to kind of have the ambition to want to see through a second phase of development of their business. But they're old enough to appreciate the fact that there's only so long it could, you know, this business can grow with just one or two owners. Because there's only so much one or two people can do. So the notion of being on a board, establishing a board of directors with my group, and kind of having an ownership group and an executive management team, and having those two separate, having the management team run the day-to-day and have the ownership group involved in the in top-line management support, capital support, and strategic development support, having that intact is attractive to a lot of owners. But if you only care about money, then the problem is that you're only going to sell to the highest bidder. The highest bidder has to justify the acquisition cost at some level, right? Because they pay the premium. And usually justification of acquisition costs is associated to what you do with the business afterwards. And normally the highest bidder will do one or two things. They're either going to make a lot of unnecessary changes and cut expenses that really shouldn't be cut because it dilutes the service offering of some level, or the value proposition of that business, right? Or the quality of that business, whether it be employees, customers, etc. Or they just simply, the buyer is just a larger entity and they just integrating the target to their entity, and the owner's legacy is pretty much gone. No one will remember that this business was even owned by the owner. And in the latter part, you know, if they're not able to successfully integrate it to something else and they just pay a premium for the sake of paying a premium, which is out there, the chances of the buyer failing go up dramatically. Yeah. So if the buyer fails, the owner's legacy is up in smoke. And if the buyer integrates their business with a larger entity, then the owner's identity and legacy also goes up to smoke. So the owners who care more about their legacy, more about their people, more about the business, the future of the business, those are usually the types of the owners that do business with us. Whereas the owners who are just care about the money, they're greedy, then they're probably not going to do business with us. But I don't knock them for being greedy. You know, if you're a business owner, you took the risk, you built the business, you kind of deserve to be greedy if that's what you want. So it's either, you know, so if you're going to be greedy, I'm fine with that. But what I will not allow an owner to do is be delusional, meaning the owner is not going to get what he wants from a legacy standpoint from the highest bidder. Yeah. And that's like a real counterintuitive reality. It's very counterintuitive because usually when you sell something, the highest bidder is the best buyer.
Yeah. But in, value it the most.
But in the business sale world, right, in the world of business sale transactions, the highest bidder is usually not the best buyer. You know, they usually, and when an owner just goes to the highest bidder, they're basically saying that the money is the most important part, which is fine, like I said. But just like very similar to being a service provider, right? I could provide a crappy service and charge you the lowest price, or I could charge you the best service and charge you a lot of money, right? But as a consumer, you have to determine, well, what do you want? Do you want the best service or do you want the best price? But if you actually think you're going to get the best service and the best price, you're probably delusional as a consumer. Yet you have consumers that are always bottom feeding for the lowest, but they have to sacrifice service. So, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, Ferragamo and Payless shoes, right? There's a difference between Ruth Chris and McDonald's, right? Same classes of products and services, right? Same classification of goods, but that the service around it is a lot higher for the Ruth Chris versus McDonald's, right? Or the service around Payless versus Ferragamo, right? You know, it's totally different. But I would be delusional if I wanted Ferragamo level shoe and try to get it for Payless price. Or if I wanted to, you know, pay for a steak dinner at Ruth Chris and pay the same amount I would pay for three Big Macs at McDonald's. Like, it's just, it's very similar. The business sale world, the world of business sale transactions work very similarly. That if I'm a seller, I can sell to the highest bidder, but if I care about my people, I care about my relatives, I care about the people who helped me become successful, if I wanted to retain their role and their position and give them opportunity, it's very difficult for me to do that. And I wanted to preserve my legacy and make sure that this business is actually successful once I even sell it, or I sell a majority interest or whatever the transaction is. It's hard to do that and get the most money at the same time. Because again, the buyer coming in who pays the highest has to justify the acquisition cost, and that's going to cause them to, you know, pretty much change things around significantly.
All right. So what advice would you give to somebody that wants to sell their business and they're just starting to think about it? Where should they start?
Well, I think the first step is to ask themselves, why are they looking to sell? Are they looking to sell and leave the business completely? Are they disgusted with the business? Or are they just simply tired of being in the day-to-day, and they're tired of having all the risk? And I think that's important. If you're just, you want out, you want nothing to do with this business, you don't care what happens to the people, you just want out, then you have the right to want out, and then I think you should be looking at the business and see what the driver values are. And again, the driver values are net earnings and the transferability of those earnings. Right? Those are the two values. So if you have the business set up where a lot of earnings are being generated and you're not the one in the day-to-day, you have a team running the day-to-day, I think moving in that direction will drive up the value of the business along with a consideration in terms of what kind of earnings does your business produce. Is it project revenue? Is it repeat business? Or is it recurring revenue? Any business that's built around recurring revenue will sell for a higher multiple of earnings. Businesses that are project-based will sell for less. So understanding the reality of how this whole thing works, I think, would be step one. Step two is deciding, am I looking to leave the business or do I want to preserve my legacy? Okay. If you want to leave the business, then what you're saying is, I want the money. Mm-hmm. Then set it up where you can get the money. But if preservation of your legacy is most important, then selling to the buyer who you believe is going to grow the company is going to be more important than the money. Yeah. And oftentimes the best buyer, well, they're a mid-range bidder because they're not paying a premium for a reason, right? Because they're the best buyer. They're the ones who have the most business savvy. They're the ones who will bring the same level of fiscal responsibility that they're bringing to the transaction, they're going to actually bring that to the business, right? If a buyer is fiscally irresponsible at the time of sale, mm-hmm. then they're probably going to be fiscally irresponsible post-closing. So the seller has to understand, what do they want? Do they want, they just want out of the day-to-day? If they just want out of the day-to-day, then most savvy buyers are going to want to strike some sort of long-term relationship with you in order for the business to be preserved, because a smart buyer knows that he's not going to be able to build that business without the founder's participation on some level, both at the transition level and post-transition. You know, so it's both. Whereas a buyer who's not as savvy, or a buyer who's either arrogant or greedy, is just going to, they'll pay a premium without any of these considerations, and they will treat your business accordingly afterwards.
So tell me, how has it been with the businesses you acquired? What kind of difference have you seen from the time you acquired it to later on? I mean, for net earnings, all of the management, how's that?
Well, our portfolio has performed really nicely over the years. You have up and downs. We've never had a default on any of our loans. We've never had anything go out of business. So there's you know, obviously we have a stellar record in that regard. We have 22 companies last year. I think 13 of them had record years. Wow. Then we had maybe six of them just kind of hold their own. It was a tough environment last year because of supply chain, et cetera. Still going through that. And then we had like a couple of businesses that went backwards a little bit, and a couple that have been hurting since COVID anyway. And those businesses are holding their own, but they went backwards. So it's like any portfolio of businesses. You have your ups and you have your downs depending on, you know, what business and where we're at in the economic cycle. But I would say for the most part, we've been very successful at taking businesses that are making $1 million to $3 million in income and building them up. And then one way we do that is by retaining the founder's strategic involvement, which is very critical.
Awesome. Well, if people want to find out more about you and your services, where would they look? Where can they find you?
It's not a service. If you're looking to sell your business and you'd like to just talk to us as a potential buyer, you could certainly reach out to me. Or if you're looking to grow your wealth or your business through acquisition, I have a platform that partners with entrepreneurs to buy companies. So if you're looking to grow through acquisition, or you're looking to just develop another income stream, and you think buying a business could kind of get you there, we're a great platform. We're pretty much a potential partner to do that with. So you can reach me at 718-629-8349. That's a direct number to reach. Or you could reach my, you can email me, jc@bizgrowpartners.com. And you spell it at BIZGRO partners with an S.com. You can meet me, you can reach out to me and schedule a meeting. Awesome.
Perfect. And we'll put this all in the show notes so that the show will be there again. I appreciate you being a guest again. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Thank you.